Hello, all you positive heads out there. It's so good to be back with all you beautiful reflections of the one source consciousness that creates and animates all things. If you're new to this podcast, of course, we're super happy to have you here. And if you've been listening and enjoying for a while, I would be super grateful if you would please take a moment to give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It's one of the best and simplest ways to pay it forward and help others find the show so that they too can tap into the powerful perspectives and positive vibrations we are collectively emanating. The other unique and magical way to share this show is by sending any friends you think would benefit from listening to this podcast our Game with the Universe link at positivehead.com/game. Also listed in the show notes, which will serve them up a quote-unquote random episode when they click it. Just instruct them before clicking the link to close their eyes for a moment and sincerely ask the universe to cue up the episode that contains the insight and perspectives that they most need to hear at this point in their life journey, and then click to listen to whatever episode is synchronistically served up to them. I have heard time and time again from people about the incredible results they received playing the game. So just tell your friends, magical results are guaranteed or their karma back. All right, all you positive heads, welcome, welcome. Here we grow again. I have a very special guest here today. You all had the pleasure of hearing Jeff Skult on the most recent SoulShare episode. And if you recall from that episode, he referenced his father multiple times, Mort Skult, and who had one of my favorite answers ever regarding the meaning of life, genuineness. And then so Jeff and I got talking afterwards about the potential with Mort's 91 years young birthday coming up. You know what? Why don't we drag Mort into a podcast against his will? And here he is. Super happy to have both Mort and Jeff back with me in the studio today. How are you guys? This is going to be a good one. I'm really, really excited that we did this. This is, you know, Jeff, well, Mort, you have a lot to live up to. Your son certainly thinks highly of you. And you know, since the podcast itself is all about authenticity and genuineness and positive mindset, and you've been on this journey longer than probably most, maybe everyone who listens to this episode, we don't know that exactly, but you know, we just love to use this time together today to get your unique insight and downloads of, you know, what you know. Maybe starting off a little bit of sharing your background, because I know you had a lot of challenges early on from what Jeff has shared with me, and, you know, share whatever feels relevant about your background, and then we'll kind of get into what's worked well for you.
Well, I was born in New Jersey, and after living there for 6 months of my life, my parents decided after their my father's store was burned down by the neighbors who didn't particularly care for someone who was not Italian.
Being the Wow. That sounds like some mafia stuff.
Well, no, I think it was a cultural issue. I mean, they just wanted their people around them. And when my father developed the store there, it was out of character and out of culture. So the big problem was, of course, he couldn't get the money for the insurance company because they thought that it was arson, which it was. But of course, he didn't light the match. So he then decided to journey to Missouri, not having been there before, because he had heard that it was out west someplace and wouldn't be nice to start a new life out west. And so he packed his wife and all their possessions and their Plymouth and me and made their journey out to Independence, Missouri. Mm. And that's where my first few years were in Independence.
I think my grandfather That might even, I need to double check, but that might be the town that my grandfather and great-grandfather lived.
Is that right?
Definitely Missouri. And yeah, I'll get back to you on that one. Wouldn't that be funny?
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Well, Independence was a very small town, very Midwestern. It's also the county seat. What that means is the county courthouse is in the middle of a square, and like a lot of small Midwestern towns. And that's where I spent my first few years there. And then when the war came, the Second World War came, my father went into a defense industry business. Rather interesting occupation, because he had always been the owner of a store. And what they asked him to do was to buy the parts to build railroads. So for the next years that we were at war, he was in effect the acquirer of the various parts to build railroads around the Midwest to move munitions and other items.
That's what my grandfather did, and he was a railroad guy. Oh,
you're kidding.
Great grandfather. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun to do the research on that?
You know, I happen to have up in front of me, this is an interesting kind of synchronicity, my family tree that someone is putting together for me right now. And it's Galenum. So it's literally on another tab on my computer. So me and Jeff here, I just literally, while you're talking, pulled it up. Galena, Missouri was
what
where my Galena, G-A-L-E-N-A, is where my great grandfather, when he passed anyway. Now, I feel like I've heard Independence, so maybe that's where they had lived at one point. I'm not sure. I'd have to ask, you know, to find that out. But yeah, and he was a railroad guy. So yeah, wouldn't that be funny?
That is fun. That is fun. And it was, of course, that was Harry Truman's town too. And I was there till about, it was probably around 12 or 13 years old. And it was kind of interesting because one of the things that happened with Harry Truman is, little did I know, but I met him. And Independence was in a place that was commonly referred to as the Bible Belt. And there was a lot of resistance to gambling. Mm. And one of the things that Harry Truman loved to do more than anything else was to play poker. And so my father, after he came to Independence, it was on a weekend, and he saw the tremendous amount of farmers that had come into the city at Independence with their wares. And not only that, but they got their money, cash on the barrel head, and went out and spent it. Their wives did.
And right.
When he saw all that activity, he said, my God, this has got to be the best place in the world to open up a store. So right. He proceeded to end up settling with the insurance agreement for some amount. I have no idea. And took the little bit of money that he had and bought it and rented a storefront. And that was going to be his new store called The Leader. And however, now that store was a three-story building, and the two stories up above it were for storage of the various goods that he offered the public for purchase. And he was approached by his dentist. He said, Joe, would you mind letting us use your store perhaps in the attic? Because on Saturday, we like to get a bunch of men together, and they like to talk, and something that you're not supposed to know, but they'd like to play poker.
Yeah.
If you don't have any objection to that. And so my father said, of course not. No, that's fine. You know, you guys are all potential customers of the store, so of course you can come in there. And
yeah.
So one of the people to play every Saturday afternoon was Harry Truman.
Wow.
And so I was, I guess, around 11 years old and really intrigued about the fact that they were using these decks of cards to move money around.
Right.
That was fascinating.
Right.
And so I used to sit on the stairs and listen to them talk. And that's, of course, where I first acquired an expanded vocabulary with some interesting words that my mother had never used around our house.
Right.
Besides the fact that poker was poker, and that's where I first became acquainted with poker. And one day, as I recall, they called me over and said, listen, would you mind going next door and pick up some wild turkey for me? And I said, well, I'm not going to do that. Are you crazy? Well, oh, no, this is something we drink. These are not animals. And they said, go next door and here's some money and bring it back. And they'll fix it up for you. They know all about us. And the place next door was a bar, which was also a barber shop. And if you remember, in those small towns, you could see these pillars with a red and white stripe going around the stem of the pillar. Uh-huh. And of course, there was a cigar store Indian right outside the cigar store. So I went in there. And in those days, there was no problem at all about the age that you had to be.
That's what I was wondering. 11-year-old going to buy a bottle of wild turkey, huh?
They were shots.
Oh.
So here I am. I remember.
You're like the cocktail waiter.
Exactly. I have vivid recollections of every Saturday carrying that tray down the street with shots of wild turkey.
To Harry Truman and company.
And one of them was Harry Truman, and I remember he gave me a quarter one day.
Quarter. Wow.
And after the war, my father, right after the war, we moved to Kansas City, the big city, because my mother wanted me to go to a good high school there. And one of the things that I did, because my parents never knew much about it or anything else, but Kansas City was a big town for scouting, Boy Scouts. And so I joining a troop there and entered what we would call middle school today. Unfortunately, that was about in 1943, I believe. And I was one of the young children who developed polio, which in those days was quite a scare.
That was before the polio vaccine, right?
It was about 5 years before the polio vaccine. And, of course, nobody knew what it was. Nobody knew how you got it. Nobody knew how you spread it. And it was one of those, the only thing they did was to be proactive as they closed down all the public swimming holes. So all the swimming pools that were public all closed down, but they didn't know how it was going to be transmitted. The idea of talking about a virus at that time was a little bit unusual. And so the doctor we had who made house calls just came one day and said, I'm not quite sure what he's got, but I think it may be polio. So anyway, just ensued a period of getting over that virus and then rehabilitation, which left me with a few difficulties in terms of physical activity. But anyway.
Yeah, that was a pretty severe virus to get, right? I mean.
Well, nobody knew what to do about it. I mean, we've just gone through the pandemic thing, and at least you had research chemists that were coming up with a shot that you could have, but in those days there was nothing. They really did not have anything to treat you whatsoever, and they just treated you symptomatically. A lot of people, of course, the virus affected their lungs. So they ended up, for the rest of their life, being in something called an iron lung, which looks like something you use for deep sea fishing, or I mean deep deep sea diving. But it was very scary. And then what they did was they put a skull and crossbones on your front door, so that your neighbors wouldn't come around. And of course, in those days, they delivered milk to your doorstep. I don't know, you would never, your grandparents said. And they,
I remember that even when I was a kid.
The milkman would not deliver it to the door. He'd leave it on the curb. Because, I mean, people were just terrified because they didn't know what to do. It wasn't at all like this pandemic that, yes, was severe and it killed a lot of people. But this predominantly affected children. And the people who got, quote, over the virus ended up with all sorts of residual muscular handicaps, to the extent that when you saw somebody that was walking with stilt, with braces on their leg, you probably knew that he had polio.
Yeah.
And that's the way he lived for the rest of his life. But my mother was determined that was not going to happen. And so she got me in touch with this wonderful nurse who was not viewed very highly by the medical profession to spend time with me in the swimming pool. And that virtually caused me to rehabilitate myself so I could lead a very normal life. Somewhat. And I had a teacher who understood the dangers of polio and all that, but insisted that I would not miss a year of school. So she came every afternoon and brought lessons for me to study and learn. And so I never missed a year, which was pretty remarkable. I was looking back on it. A teacher, certainly in those days, and teachers continue to do things that are beyond what their job description is.
Right.
And that was one of the things that they did. And so after the war, my father was looking around for something else to do. And instead of, he didn't want to continue to just buy railroads or railroad parks. He wanted to own a store again. And he found one in St. Joe, Missouri, which is about 60 miles north of there. And so we moved to St. Joe during my high school years. And I continued my scouting. And probably one of the mentors of my life was the scoutmaster who edged and urged me on to the point where I ended up getting an Eagle. I became an Eagle Scout with 3 POMs.
And, wow.
Which was really extraordinary.
That's really challenging to do, isn't it?
Yeah. So that was my background. And
I mean, stay there for a moment, because look, you know, a hallmark of your life is certainly your positivity. And I would say that it's also not just your resilience, but it's your attitude of not seeing that thing that maybe was a challenge is necessarily something from a victim mentality. So much so that I remember, you know, the story that the doctors suggested that you weren't going to be able to walk again. And you said, you know, damn right I am. And you became one of the youngest Eagle Scouts in Missouri history. And so your life went. And I just think it'd be fascinating, because we've all faced, you know, adversity and the resilience within that is powerful. And I would just love for you to share a little bit about how did you, you know, where did that attitude of that persistence and resistance and all resilience and also positivity come from?
Well, thank you, Jeff, for that. It wasn't quite as grandiose as what you make it, but I didn't want to show up in school with braces on my leg. I didn't want to look different. And it was, I think that was it. Just the idea of having to look that way and, you know, And it was about the time that, you know, we were looking around at the women differently instead of some
instead of having cooties.
Right. And so I certainly didn't want to walk around with braces on my leg. And but that was one thing. And the other thing about it is that I think I got an enormous amount of support from my parents. My mother ended up buying, you guys have never probably seen this, but maybe at a museum, of a roller wringer. When clothes would come out of the washing machine, there was a device with rollers to squeeze the water out of it. And so my mother bought one of those things and would heat up these hot patches of army blankets and cut them up and put them on my legs and all that sort of thing. So that made a hell of a difference. And it was something that very few people were even thinking about doing. But it wasn't a medication. It was just something that they applied to your muscles and helped them recover and not atrophy. So I think that the inspiration I received and the support that I put from my parents, besides the fact that I didn't want to walk around with braces on my legs or my arms, impelled me on to do what I needed to do, and that was swimming, to get to the point where I could look normal, quote unquote, and have a near normal life with other kids in the class. So I think it was like that. I didn't have any far reaching, grandiose thought about life. I was more interested, obviously, like most kids, in what's going to happen tomorrow. And with that in mind, the only thing I can say is that attitude sort of carried me through in a lot of ways, that whereas sometimes something would be presented that was difficult or maybe not possible to do, that was always a challenge more than it was a command not to do it. So, and the other thing about it is that without getting too philosophical, in all the research and reading that I did, people who have had polio end up becoming what are called type A people, which I never even thought about or anything, but I guess psychiatrists have spent a lot of time with post-polio patients. And what they've concluded is that they're people who are the can-doers.
Yeah.
Rather than, let's say, oh, woe is me.
So right.
I never got to the point where I was, woe is me, and I need pity. And as a matter of fact, it was actually the reverse.
Right.
And the one thing about scouting, you take that and put it on top of that condition, is scouting is about helping and serving others. So I grew up with that attitude and philosophy of serving others.
Right. You know, Jeff had said something, told a story on the podcast, which maybe you could tell again, when he was younger, asking you a question that sort of inspired him along, you know, along his own journey, around character and integrity, stating something to the effect of one's character is what you do when nobody's watching. And I'd love to hear you sort of explain what you mean by that.
Well, I think one has to be proud of oneself. And how do you feel about yourself? Would you seek out you as a person to become a friend with?
Right.
Or would you not? And so it's a matter of being satisfied with who you are and the way you conduct your life. And you know, I will say this, I'm Brandon and Jeff and everybody else that may, during your lifetime, you have mentors, and it's not necessarily your father or your mother. There are people outside the family circle that become mentors. And I think the Scoutmaster I had who impelled me and pushed me on to become an Eagle Scout and other people in my life, and the teacher that continued to teach me. So I got through fifth and sixth grade, without missing a year. It was pretty remarkable. And at the time, you didn't call them mentors. You didn't think about them. They were just doing it. But in retrospect, when you think about the people who have made you who you are, you have to live up to that.
And, right.
And the picture that they helped you create of who you are. So it was always my view in terms of whatever profession I got into, that it was a matter of service. That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of more about what it is. And for people, let's say, who are constantly finding ways to shortchange themselves and perhaps skirt the edges of what civilization expects of, either by way of laws or customs. I don't know what they think of themselves, except that they're really smart because they were able to game the system. I think at the end of the day, you have to look back and say, are you proud of who you were?
Yeah.
What you did?
Agreed. Yeah.
And I think it's something that everybody could look at themselves and see, what about it? I know that there's obviously tremendous misfortune and things that happen that are beyond people's ability to keep from happening. But those are the challenges also.
Right.
And frankly, it's the way you handle them and the way you look at them. Some people, it's woe is me, I need help, and blah, blah, blah. And other people will say, well, we're going to do something. I remember, Jeff will remember this. One of the days, we used to go down to St. Vincent de Paul on Christmas, because that's, of course, when a lot of the help doesn't work on Christmas Day. And we went down there to, in effect, serve food to the homeless.
Hmm.
And it wasn't serving food to the homeless that was so interesting for Jeff and Jeff and my daughter. It was the fact that you could sit down with them and listen to who they are as humans.
Yeah.
Just to say, I was down there dishing up food for the homeless. And, oh, yeah, I know. I've seen those bums laying around in the street. And yeah, da, da, da. But when you sit down and you listen to their story as to the way life has treated them, and
yeah,
what they experienced. And some of it, I granted, was, alcoholically induced or drug induced and all that.
Mental health and others. Absolutely. Probably just a rough path of, unfortunate things. Yeah.
But, you sit down and you listen to their story. There was one fellow whose wife, they didn't have insurance. His wife had cancer, and he had a bill of $200,000 that he couldn't possibly pay. And he went bankrupt. Wife divorced him. He sort of hit the road drinking and all that. And you listen to what he had to say. And he said, boy, he said, if I could just get enough money to have a taxi to go from Phoenix over to Glendale and maybe live with my sister for a while. I mean, it's pathetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, it's and I'm not talking about necessarily volunteering for this fun drive or this fun drive. I think it's a matter of, serving people.
It's an interesting thread to follow, Dad, in terms of that aspect of serving people. Everyone on this who's listening to this podcast, and certainly you, has lived a life in service. You've lived a life of giving. I will never not be touched by the conversation we had after mom transitioned almost 2 years ago to this day. I asked you a question of what was it like for you, who for 2 years was in a state of absolute saint-like consistent giving, you know, and you know, with mom, and she was, all she could do was receive. And in fact, you know, you even share with me, like, you know, at the last year when she didn't even have the muscles to be able to move her lips, she couldn't even kiss you back. You had shared. And so I asked you the question, I said, what was it like to, for somebody who's been in life of service, to be in such, you know, service in that way, which you did from such a place of love. And you looked at me and you said, I've discovered there is no such thing as giving. There is no such thing of receiving. When you're doing it from the place of heart, it's just sharing love. That was one of the most poetic, powerful thoughts, because I think that we human condition, we can keep score. Like, am I giving? Am I receiving? Is it time for me? I don't know how to receive. I don't know. And the way you phrased that was so powerful and poignant.
I have the feeling that I was, oh, I'm giving this and spending the time to do this and all that. It was an experience. It was a life's experience. And believe it or not, it gave me a lot of satisfaction because I was able to create a quality of life for Arlene that she never had any level of anxiety.
Right.
We would find ways to laugh. I found things like massages, and I hired a person to play the guitar and sang dances, which she loved.
That's amazing.
So we would sit there, and it was a lot of fun. Frankly, it was something that I would not have ever done, you know, with hiring a musician or a guitarist to do that. So it was a new experience for me. But the selfish part was that I got a lot out of it. I got a lot.
Right.
That's what I wanted. I'm not sure it was great for her, but I was selfish enough to want that experience. And those 2 years where we all knew how they were going to end, nevertheless, we just treated every day as a new experience. And what are we going to do to get something out of it?
Right.
So I was pretty selfish about it. And it had to be okay for me.
It's a redefinition of selfish.
Yeah. It's a good kind of selfish.
I think it would be fun, Dad, to rewind the clock 57 years from 2 years ago when, you know, you meet this woman, you were engaged after 3 dates, 3 weeks. I'd love for you to speak to, what were you thinking? Like, seriously, what were you thinking?
I don't think I was thinking. There wasn't a lot of thought process. It wasn't an intellectual thing that sounded like somebody I ought to pick up with. But it was one of those, I know they talk about love at first sight and 10 years later, it's, you know. But when I met her, it was pretty evident to me that there was a lot about her that I wanted to learn more about and life. So,
you know, 57 years you made it, huh?
Well, yeah, what happened was it was 3 weekends I spent with her.
Wow.
She had a, as Jeff knows, she had a very quirky way of looking at life, which I thought was pretty good. And she didn't take herself too seriously. I don't think we ever grew up. I mean, that we didn't grow up with our children to take things so seriously. There were serious things that had to be dealt with. But by and large, my wife had a very, as Jeff will know, a very funny way of looking at life. And he made a video of her at the time that she had Alzheimer's. And remember the time we went to the ice skating rink, Jeff? Was it one of your buddies was having a birthday party? Remember that, Jeff?
Oh, yeah. And she wore a Patagonia, but that Patagonia wasn't quite enough for a 32-degree temperature in the ice skating rink. And my mom didn't necessarily have a proclivity to swear, but she walked out of there just being like, it is fucking freezing. It's just fucking freezing. And she just couldn't stop saying it. And she just was just, she was a bright light. She was an artist and she lived a artist lens. And Dad, I think you probably, I mean, what you, she really, I think it's a beautiful thing about partnership. I mean, she opened up something special inside you of going deeper into appreciation of what?
Of art, yeah.
Yeah.
And the artistic aspects of life, absolutely. I mean, she, a sunset, or let's say a particular color that was, we used to do a lot of backpacking and hiking, and this was a girl who grew up in Beverly Hills, California. The idea of taking a hike meant going to all the stores on Rodeo Drive, which she hated. When we got into backpacking, I mean, she did it because I was there, but she became enamored with, and so did Jeff and our kids, be enamored with nature, with the wilderness. So it ended up where she was not a reluctant partner at all in doing that. She enjoyed it. So we had many funny experiences doing that.
You shared with me a very interesting perspective on nature. You know, I think some people fear nature, and you always felt comfortable in nature. I'd love for you to share a little bit about that because it's really powerful. Nature is not that thing to fear. That is what you shared with me.
Well, I think, Jeff, it's more of a matter of understanding limits. I mean, if the weather forecast is that a huge snowstorm or rainstorm is coming in, and you say, "Oh, screw it, I'm just going to go. I don't worry about it at all." You can easily get into trouble. I know when I took up sailing, and we had some pretty heavy. I mean, your grandfather, you know, he had no fear at all. And there were times when we were out there where we shouldn't have been out there. So I think it's a matter of knowing the limits of it all. But a lot of people are either grow up with a bad experience. They may have been attacked by a snake. So henceforth, all snakes are, you know, dangerous.
Right.
I mean, I've probably seen 50 rattlers in my lifetime, never bitten. And as long as you don't come up on them without them, you know, where you don't know it, and you put your hands down someplace where you don't look before you do it. I think bad things can happen. But generally speaking, the animals don't look at you like they're next door dirt. They're as scared of you as you may be of them. So Jeff will tell you about some interesting stories that we had with bears.
He said you got chased by a bear once?
Not exactly. I was chasing the bear.
Oh.
Because I wanted to film him.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow or other, looking through the wide, I mean, the telephoto lens. And the telephoto lens is not on, but the bear's getting bigger. I suddenly realized that he was after me.
Oh, wow. Tables have turned.
Yeah. You know, no, I don't think Jeff and my daughter, well, Jeff is more urban oriented than our daughter. Our daughter is definitely always out in the wilderness and things. And Jeff discovered basketball. And that was the love of his life when he was younger. But no, nature's to be loved, enjoyed, preserved, protected. And I think people who don't have it in their lives, I think they miss something.
Yeah.
I really
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
But I know people who have a very urban life, and the idea of getting out of this, of that is a challenge, not only a challenge, but there's fear attached to it, and it may be that they had a very bad experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right, right. Well, a couple things that I'd like to hear from you as we, you know, time flies here. We're, you know, we got a little bit of time left, and I, you know, what was said on the last episode I had with just Jeff that really got to me was, you know, I asked him the meaning of life, and he said, you would say it's genuineness. And so I'd love to hear you speak to that for a moment. And then as like, sort of as on the back of that, as we wind down here, what advice you would give to your younger self? You know, you're 91 years young now. And, you know, if you could go back, what's like sort of a key thing that you would share with those listening and your younger self? So two questions there.
Brandon, I didn't hear what you said, that you saw something. Can you say that again?
So I had asked you, Dad, what you thought the meaning of life was. And because many people ascribe that the meaning of life is happiness. And you said to me in response, you said, actually, no, I don't believe the meaning of life is happiness, because then you're always chasing to be happy. The meaning of life is genuineness. And so.
No, I think the meaning of life is fulfilled. To be, when you say, you know, happy birthday, or all I want is my kids to be happy. Parents say that all the time. That is not what they really want. What they really want is they want to have a fulfilled life.
Right.
And along with that is happiness, but happiness comes in all kinds of packages, not the least of which is a job well done.
Mm. And I would add that genuineness even, you know, can lead to that fulfillment.
Absolutely. I am a religious person, in the sense that I think there's a force, a life force that's bigger than us, that is unknown. And the religion that I follow amplifies and reinforces that. The thing about it, though, is that when people say, "Are you really happy?" I don't think that's what they are really asking at all. I'm asking you, do you think that you have a fulfilled life?
Right, right.
And that brings happiness. So it also brings satisfaction, and it brings a feeling of well-being.
What advice would you give to those who want to find fulfillment? You know, your younger self, the younger listeners, you know, tuning into this. What's the first thing that kind of comes to your mind to get on a path to fulfillment?
I think service. I mean, how many times have you done something with somebody else that was spontaneous? You know, I had a very interesting experience the other day. It was my birthday, and we went to this restaurant, and the person who was hosting it had some balloons and tied to my chair, and so I arrived there, and I passed by this other couple who was sitting at the table next to us, and they started talking about birthdays and how old are you and how, why did you live this life, and you wouldn't believe it, but when we got our bill, they had bought a bottle of wine.
Wow.
And I have no idea who they are. I have no idea where they. I wanted to thank them. They had gotten up, they finished their dinner, and they left.
Wow.
And there was this bottle of wine that they purchased, and I was just absolutely floored.
Wow.
And that's the kind of thing that is, forgetting about how my reaction, but people will do that sort of thing. It's sort of, I'm sure you've heard of something called play it forward.
Yep.
Well, if you've ever had that experience or done it yourself, that's a connection with another human being that is unsolicited, and people will do it, and it makes you feel that, you know, okay.
And the person not even seeking the acknowledgement, right? The act itself is fulfilling.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk about happiness, I mean, sure, I can tell you a great joke, or we can go on a roller coaster ride and, you know, whippy and all that. And I'm not denying that, but you do something like I just mentioned, and that lives. You live with that for a while.
Yeah.
It makes you feel pretty good.
Yeah, it makes me think of a quote that I often will reference. Gandhi said, if you want to find yourself, lose yourself in the service of others.
That's right. Absolutely.
And I believe that holds true, because there are no others. You're doing it to self.
Lose means you're going to be diminished. You will not be as great as you were 5 minutes ago when you lose something. It's not that at all. It's what you gain.
Yeah.
It's, and Gandhi, I would disagree with. I don't think you lose anything.
Yeah, you gain yourself in the service of others.
Think of the times you've done that.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel pretty good. Look at you right then. You were smiling.
Mm-hmm.
You were not only smiling, there must have been some incident that recalled that you thought, and it didn't necessarily mean you won the lottery. It didn't mean that you climbed the highest hurdle or whatever it was. But it was just something there, that connection, that and the interaction between people, I think, is besides personal satisfaction, gives you that. And it can be also destructive.
It can
also be unpleasant.
True, definitely can. Well, this has been constructive, I would say, more. And I have appreciated you coming to take the time to share some insights and wisdom. And Jeff, I appreciate you taking the time to make this all happen. And is there anything that either of you would like to sort of, as we sign off here, anything that you'd like to leave the listeners with?
I'll leave that up to Jeff.
Dad, I think, look, I mean, we celebrated his 90th birthday last year, and we put together an anthology of his life by those who he touched. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the end of watching it, you know, what washed over him and what he reflected back was just, you know, saying like, look, this has been a pretty good gig. Like, that's what life is about, is just appreciating all the twists and turns and roller coaster rides. And so, I think maybe to close us out, Dad, like, what would you, you know, what would your, not, what advice would you give to your younger self? But literally, like, as you look back on your life, what would be a piece of parting advice for those younger listeners of how to live their best life?
I think that life, it's the old story, the man plans and God smiles.
A lot of that going on. Life's what happens when your plans don't work out?
Yeah. Because how many times have you planned something and everything, and then all of a sudden, anyways, something bad's going to happen, or it doesn't work out, or something like that. And I think I think you're being challenged, and that's how you treat that. And that may cause you never to do it again, never plan again, because that's something you're going to screw up. Or if you look at it, it's kind of like the human comedy. That's what happens. And so
that may just be enlightenment, right? Lightening up and being able to laugh at how absurd it all is.
They generally make a pretty good story.
Right.
Particularly when somebody tells a story, you know damn well that's been embellished. Nobody ever tells a story factually the way it happened.
Yeah, it is. There is a proclivity for that with all of us, I think, to some degree. Well, this has been quite the pleasure. I certainly appreciate you, Mort. Thank you for being you. Thank you again, Jeff, for taking the time to coordinate this and coming back on. And all of you out there for tuning in.
Conscious about this whole day, because first of all, there was no interaction with you back and forth as to your reaction and to the way, and you may totally disagree with something I said, or that you do believe, for example, that life is to make you happy. That's what life's all about.
I'm here to hear what you think and share that. And I would say, for the most part, I think you're spot on with your perspectives. And I don't know that and a cup, 10 cent might get you a cup of coffee somewhere. But probably needs more than 10 cents.
I will say this, that I've learned a lot from Jeff.
Yeah.
I am not the same person I was when I got married.
Mm.
And I would say that everybody always says, so what did you learn from your parents? I may have learned more from them.
Mm. Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I can wrap it up this way, which is, we can listen to either respond or we can listen and understand. And you have consistently shown the art of curiosity and the art of listening and learning, and you'll be 90++++ and you'll continue to want to learn. I think that's a beautiful, aspect ratio of just living life, which is we have figured nothing out. We're going to continue figuring it out. And that's a beautiful way to live. So Dad, happy birthday. This is your first podcast. Of maybe many more, we'll see. But this is really cool to see you in this format, because you are you're a king and a wisdom dispenser, and I love you. And for very selfish reasons, I'm happy you were born.
And the thing I loved about it is nobody interrupted me.
Isn't that a little bit of a shock? thank you, Mort. Thank you very much for taking the time, and all of you for tuning in, tuning your beautiful brainwaves and incredible hearts into another episode. Till next time, journey well.